Okay, thank you all for joining us today. And I want to give a big thank you to Pete Weddington, who has agreed to be interviewed. So, Pete is an IT director for Owens Corning. And I'm Lee Green, and I run IRI's Research and Strategic Initiatives. So, this interview is an element of IRI's digitalization community. And the DXC is a community of organizations that are on the journey toward digital integration. So through the DXC, you can access case studies with fresh, relevant content, facilitated roundtable discussions on key topics. We'll be having one tomorrow at 11 a.m. We also have updates with insights and additional resources and webinar interviews with thought leaders like we're doing today. And these take place on the third Thursday of the month at 12 o'clock Eastern. We will be skipping June, but we will be back in July when we will be talking to Iria Giuffrida from the College of William and Mary Law School about the legal and ethical implications of AI tools. That should be fun. And I'll be sure to sign all of you up for updates to the DXC. And if you don't want to get the updates, just let me know. I don't want to send you emails you don't want. Just a few housekeeping items to get through before we can begin our conversation with Pete. So first, this session is being recorded and you will get a link to the recording. We'll be distributing the recording as a podcast, so there won't be any visuals here today. And second, please hold all questions until the end. Once we open the floor to questions, you can either raise your hand using that function on the dashboard, at which point you can unmute and ask your question. I'll call on you. Or you can type your question in to the chat and I will read it out for you. Okay, all the boring stuff is out of the way. Thank you, Pete, for joining us.
Glad to be here.
So can you tell us about your background? Everybody knows you from the roundtable calls, but I think you're kind of a jack of all trades. So we want to hear more about how you got to that spot.
Yeah, I sent you my CV or resume, kind of my background, but I've been with Owens Corning 18 years, coming up on 19 years. But prior to joining Owens Corning, I did 20 years active duty in the U.S. Coast Guard. With the Coast Guard, I was taught to drive ships, I flew aircraft, and I worked on IT systems. And it was always interesting as I would talk to people in the Coast Guard, they're like, "What are you?" You know, nobody could figure out what I was. Are you a ship driver? Are you a pilot? You're an aviator, or you're an engineer, or what are you? And I always took that as a compliment. I liked that. I liked the background that I had, the opportunity that I had with the Coast Guard. And my last assignment with the Coast Guard was running the aviation IT systems, non-aircraft, but all of the IT systems to run the logistics parts, flight operations, everything. It's kind of like being a CIO of an airline. So it was a great opportunity. And then I retired and joined Owens Corning, focused purely on the IT systems aspects. And then that's where I'm at now, just working with the different parts of Owens Corning.
Awesome. So can you talk a little bit more about the skills and experiences that you developed in the Coast Guard and how they've helped you in your role?
Yeah, I mentioned one, just a broad work experience. I was my undergrad was in mathematics, so that's the way I think about things too. I did end up did get a master's in information systems through George Mason, which is out of Fairfax, Virginia. So the broad experience, I was on shipboard, so I drove ships. Flew aircraft. I did a tour of duty teaching Naval Flight School. So I had the instructor point of view, student point of view, and an operational point of view. And then I went to graduate school and came out and I started working with the naval engineers, which was confused everybody, but helped them develop their IT systems. And then my last tour of duty, I got to work with the aviation engineers. And they all thought I was an engineer, but I wasn't. Ability to do that, to get that broad work experience, I think has paid me huge dividends in the transition from a military career over into working with Owens Corning. You know, there's things you could go into, values. I mean, the Coast Guard's all about honor, respect, devotion to duty. So as I was looking for companies to marry up with, those are very key things I look for. Coast Guard's motto is Semper Paratus, so always ready. So I'm always thinking ahead. It's just something ingrained in me. And then from the different disciplines I was in, big big learnings working in aviation, right? Headwork, adaptability, problem solving, standardization, you know, things like trust your instruments. People that have flown know what that means, and following procedures, but really focusing on the mission. Those things, those kind of attributes, skills, experiences, I think have solved me well making a transition to the role I'm in now.
Awesome. That's great to hear. So tell us about Owens Corning. They're the ones you picked, and where you sit and how all that fits together.
Yeah, it was interesting with Owens Corning. I got introduced by actually my best friend was working with Owens Corning at the time. He's not now, but that's how I got introduced. I remember the first time I heard about Owens Corning was in the 70s with the energy crisis. It was when I first learned about Owens Corning, but, you know, go full circle and here I am with the company so many years later. But Owens Corning, manufacturer of building materials since 1938, we're probably best known for our pink insulation and our roofing shingles. Our Duration roofing shingles are top of the line. We are organized really as three divisions. So there's a insulation division, a roofing division, and a composites division. The composite is, think about glass fibers that could go into other products. And you can, almost anything you can look up, you can think of has glass fibers in it. Most notably was in the late 50s, the first Corvette was actually Owens Corning fiberglass, made the body for that. And it's Owens Corning global presence in 30 plus countries in all of our divisions. And in my part, where I fit in the organization, so I'm in the IT organization. It's a centralized function, so kind of a, think of it as a shared service, but we have a little over 200 IT professionals for the whole company. Our company's about 19,000 employees, but so we're a manufacturing company, and we leverage a lot of you know, our talent we have internal, but also a lot of IT vendors to be able to deliver the services that we need to operate. And I, in my time at Owens Corning, I've been in IT organization all along. I've worked in all the different parts you can work in IT, except in the IT finance. I have not been in that part. And then today, so my work is focused on our digital strategy of the company. So you'll hear me refer to what we call our digital worker program. And then I have a very specific focus even side of that, where I spend a majority of my time is working with our scientists and engineers. So in product development, capital engineering, these are the people that come up with the products, the processes, the technology that we end up turning into products that we sell to our customers. That's where I fit.
Okay. So you have a defined digitalization strategy. Can you walk us through it? I'm setting the stage for all the good stuff here.
Okay. Sure. Our digitalization strategy starts with, the company has publicized that we have three key capabilities that we are working on for our growth. We have innovation, sustainability, and digital. So specifically to digital, what we have done is organized it in three pieces. So we're a manufacturing company, so it makes sense that a piece of that is digital manufacturing, and we have a leader in charge of that space. And then we have a focus around, we call it market-facing digital, but around generating revenue. So we have a big leader in charge of that space. And then we have a third part of it is, we call it the digital worker program. And that's the part that I'm leading for the company. And it's all around, the objective is just driving efficiency within the company. We have, with the digital worker program, we have an aspiration. It's building efficient. There's a lot, you know, some key words in here that I reread all the time, but building efficient, frictionless, cohesive work experience for our employees, enabling them to collaborate, big word, and connect anywhere, anytime as they perform in the services of our customers and delivery of outcomes. So, big aspiration. When I first read it, I didn't quite understand it, and I still come back to it and read it for inspiration on where to take the program.
Okay, so where have you been taking the program? What's been your approach?
Yeah, you can imagine, right? I get this assignment, which is, hey, drive efficiency within the company. Well, 19,000 employees, 3 divisions, where do you start, right? So we use a methodology that's well known called Choices to Win, and we focused on where to play. And I got initial guidance, which was, we want you to think about efficiency, but we want you to focus around customer service, our employees, our human resources. We want to focus around sourcing, and then we want you to focus around the enterprise. So the common set of tools that we use, regardless of who you are or what you do in the company, the common set of tools. And when I started learning and understanding that, I asked the leadership team, I said, hey, do you mind if I bring along 2 other areas that I'm spending a lot of time in already, which was in product development and capital engineering? Because I said, I think I'm already doing some of this, and I think we can get some synergy. So the program is focused on those 6 areas is where I've been focused the time. Our program, our strategy really got launched in late 2020. So we're starting our 3rd year on this journey.
Okay. And something that you've worked on has been with regard to automation and doing some leapfrogging there. Can you talk us through what that is?
Yeah, I think that's a key part to our strategy of this Choices to Win was, when we were thinking about digital, and then digital transformation is the big word a lot of folks have been using, but we thought of digital transformation as in 3 stages, 3 different stages. Stage 1 being just, we got this process, let's automate it. We have been doing that for years, and we have a good effective process. We have good teams that are doing that really well. Stage 2 is where, as you use the word leapfrog, but it's really around making rapid progress, but really start to transform. Maybe we don't even do that process that way anymore at all, or we bypass several processes because we've rethought how to do it. And then we have a stage 3, which is completely disruptive, right? It's almost, think of it almost like a whole nother line of business way of thinking. And where the program is that I'm working on, again, it's through a matrix of team resources that we work through, but I'm focused on stage 2 opportunities. We see stage 1 things, and I'm like, that's great, keep going, right? It's not going to interfere. I just don't focus on those things. I look for those stage 2 opportunities that really can make that big difference that we're looking for the company.
Okay. All right, so let's get to the meat of things. What are these collaboration hubs, and how are you rolling them out?
Yeah, we might want to talk back and forth or a little bit about collaboration hub itself. So I got the aspiration, I got my 6 focus areas. And I'm like, well, I don't want to get caught down into just managing, let's go automate this process or this process. So I really don't want to do that. We wanted to make this transformational. So what could we do? And I started noodling around this idea of hubs, and it really got attenuated as folks were going into COVID protocols. How can we get, because if you think about my aspiration, it was employees and being able to, a couple of key words in that aspiration were efficient, frictionless, cohesive, employees, collaborate, connect anywhere. How could we do that? And so I got the idea of a hub and looked at, what are we doing today? Do we have a practical example of a hub in our company today? And it was intuitively obvious it's our ERP environment, right? We can take a customer order, we can plan it, we can make it, we can ship it, invoice it, get paid for it, and we can do it at massive scale, and we don't need a Teams meeting to do it. So I'm sitting there going, what could we do that kind of hub? Why don't we have that in our customer service area? Why don't we have that for our employees' growth and development? Why don't we have that in how we interact with suppliers? So that's what started this idea of a collaboration hub, and started, working towards this idea. And a hub doesn't necessarily mean a single technology. It doesn't mean a brand new technology. It could be a technology that we have and we're just not using it very well. And a hub typically has to evolve over time. One of the things we've learned is with the technology, we still have to account for the people, the culture, the organization has to evolve with it. So it's, think of it as building blocks. It's not going to be, you know, 1 week later, all of a sudden everything's transformed. It's going to take a little time as we go through this, but we have that commitment to stay after this. And that's, you know, why I said I try to not get distracted by stage one work and just stay true to this stage two, and I stay in focused on this hub idea.
Okay, so can you give us an example of
a hub? Well, I mentioned the one. I mean, obviously, I think it's pretty common with other companies is ERP. One of the other ones, we had some very forward-thinking people in our company years ago that really started looking at, you know, your biggest asset with a company is your employees, was, you know, how do we get to know each other as a company? You know, phone books don't exist anymore. Your global address list only has so much information in anyway. So, I mean, we have this capability that we call Talent Center, which is anything about people in our company. And we've just extended that platform to an idea that we call Career Hub, which is where people can go to for mentoring, for training, for development planning. And that's up and running. So you think about that kind of capability that's available. And then we're doing the similar things in the other spaces that I mentioned. Customer service, a really cool idea we're doing there is the concept of omnichannel. If a customer contacts you, whether it's chat, email, phone, fax, any of the methods that they could come to you, if they come to you over your website, why don't you have that information collected? Why don't you know the next time when they call you why they reached to you the last time? Why aren't we looking at that, doing insights to deliver even better service going forward? So we've started on that journey as well. So to give you just an idea, but it's very it's focused on the six different areas, and I kind of rechecked myself to make sure I'm working in the efficiency in the right area. But if you think about it, for a manufacturing company, your customers are a big deal, your employees are a big deal, suppliers, your products, your plants, and your enterprise. And that's the six areas. That's kind of the core of what makes the company. And then the big idea is there is these collaboration hubs.
Okay. And how are you doing those for innovation and R&D? I mean, you talked about kind of a circle and opening that circle to let people in.
Yeah. So in R&D, we were kind of oriented around, I call them like big swim lanes, portfolio project management capability, our laboratory capability, our knowledge resource capability, our sustainability capabilities as kind of the big areas of focus. And as I said, a hub isn't necessarily one technology. It can be several technologies, but it's a seamless experience that we're working on for different personas who are working in that discipline. So I can go to the hub that I need to, but it knows where I'm at, it knows what I need. And we are constantly thinking of, especially in the sensitive areas where you may have intellectual property, of this idea of need to know and want to know, okay? And so in order to make things, I think the word was that we're, the idea that we're working on is how do you make these collaboration hubs? If you think about in the past, I think you used as the water cooler example, but I kind of think of it as stand-up huddles. And I got the idea watching my kids, and I remember back at high school, people would stand around in a circle and people would interact and collaborate. And then, but you'd always have a few people on the outside who couldn't figure out how to get in. My own son has a disability. He would stand outside the huddle. He couldn't figure out how to get in. So as we're bringing these digital hubs together. It's how do you put your arm around somebody and bring them inside the huddle and say, okay, for this huddle, we have already set up the security. So we have the need to know, want to know, all the right protocols are in place. But, you know, this is where we felt we could get into action about being a more inclusive company, was making sure we're thinking about the digital space the same way you would think about in a physical space. How can you put that arm around somebody and bring them in? Because in the end, I mean, to my view, knowledge is power. And if you can include more people and they have more visibility into that space, where you have the right protocols in place, man, it's a win-win for everybody. And all of that traffic that may have taken place outside of the hub through emails, spreadsheets saved here or there. You know, I listened to one MIT professor. I was doing research on this hub idea. MIT professor had said, and it still sticks with me, he said, the spreadsheet is duct taped to the digital world. And it still sticks with me because I see it all the time. In spaces where there isn't a hub, people are using spreadsheets. They're creating their own portfolio. They're creating their own set of how to organize things. And to me, I look at when I run across those instances, the spreadsheet it highlights how to get to the digital world, but also trying to remove it as a barrier from getting to the digital world. And one of the things we think about when we talk about these hubs is it's about how we work, not about how I work. And then we are also throwing in the dimension of time. A lot of times we think about just the teams that I'm working with today. One thing we've learned in product development, the team you start with is not the team you're going to finish with. People come and go. And then we started thinking about it in times of decades. There's knowledge that's gained that may not be leveraged for 20 years. So you got to be, you know, as we're thinking about engineering these hubs, we're thinking about, you know, that time dimension as well.
And you're bringing new staff, you know, new hires when they come in, you're able to kind of bring them in that way too.
Right. Yeah. New hires, if you think about onboarding new employees, you bring them into the hub, they can catch up with where the initiatives of, you know, in our portfolio and project management capability, those are life of the record company, records for the life of the company, fully searchable. So if, hey, did we ever look at this idea? It can be searched. And think how quickly that is. Without these hubs, that information could be dispersed within the environment and it could be hard to find. It's very important. And if you think about productivity initiative, being able to get somebody, a new hire, up and running on day one as fast as possible, I would think these hub ideas could really help facilitate that.
So switching gears slightly, you do a podcast too.
Yes, I do.
It to get the word out about new processes and tools. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, we had looked and done our research as well. We had found that change management is a big deal. You saw all the studies, right? A lot of these digital transformations don't necessarily fail because of technology. It's just dealing with the change management. So we looked and said, well, what more could we do? So we tried a single podcast and it seemed to do really well. And we were very specific, audio only. We weren't really looking, trying to do anything visual and keep it to 10 minutes, right? After 10 minutes, people may not, you know, we'll lose them. And then we started just talking about the program. And then over time, it has evolved. And we're almost up on a 2-year anniversary of this. But what has evolved to is really telling stories. It's a storytelling mechanism for me in finding those powerful stories where our employees, because this is all about our employees, are using these new capabilities that we have. And they tell the story of this, for me, this story of the collaboration hubs and where we're going and what it can do for us. And we're on a cadence about every 2 weeks. We've evolved a bit to some video, some images, if it helps to continue to tell the story. We'll interject information about technology, new things coming, new features that are coming. You know, one interesting aspect, and we didn't start with this, knowing this starting, was as we release a podcast, the prior ones pick up more listens. And it's continued to prove out over and over again. So we've started building up a following, regular people, getting more comments, getting suggestions of, hey, I got a good story to tell, you know, so it just starts to create a nice momentum for us. And the one thing I would caution, it does take a commitment. Doing a podcast every 2 weeks, even if it's 10, 15 minutes, it takes some pre-work and takes some coordination to make that happen. And it's always good to be several episodes ahead of time, too.
You could have a career as one of those true crime podcasters next.
No, I don't think so.
But. Fair enough. So I'm going to open the floor to questions in a minute here, but I've got one last question for you, and that's just about next steps. You know, where are things going from here?
Yeah, I've been noodling on this even more lately. Maybe I got some things to try out and see what people's reactions are to some of this. But, you know, when we started with this collaboration hub idea, we kind of listed out some attributes. In other words, okay, if I have a technology that's going to be a collaboration hub, what kind of attributes are we looking for? And I already mentioned one. One is it doesn't have to be brand new. It actually could be something, and actually preferred, something that's already in our environment that has everything we're looking for. Maybe we just need to spend a little more time on it, invest in it. But we were looking for collaboration hub capability that would be able to operate independently and could be loosely coupled, right? So this idea of a hub may be made of multiple technologies. If any one technology were to, say, go down for any point of time, it wouldn't necessarily bring down the whole hub concept. This idea of plug and play to connect to other hubs, so API enabled became a must. And resilient for business continuity, makes sense, right? 24/7 kind of capability. Everybody's going to zero trust models, but SSO integrated for layered security, privacy compliant, so all the different privacy laws is very important for us. And we wanted it to be intuitive for the beginner. So the idea is, I've always used this video game methodology when I think about the systems that I get involved with and work with, is it should be intuitive, but it should be able to scale up as I get familiar with it. Think about it, right? When you start a video game, you're at zero and you want to level up. And as you level up, you start unlocking new things and all things you can do. That's the kind of methodology I think about when you're trying to introduce somebody to some software. If you start with it's way too complex, nobody will use it. But the idea it can scale with the educated user. And then we were looking for these hub technologies so it would allow us to tap into this pool of knowledge of the team, of the function, of the enterprise, right? That's that, the idea of the power of how we work rather as how I work. And then the last thing that we put down here, and this is a couple of years ago, was that because we're a manufacturing company, we look for the software we get. We rely heavily on what the OEM provides, but we're looking for OEMs that have built-in AI that can mature and continuously delivers more value for us. So we thought about that ahead of time. The thing that got me thinking was Microsoft released a study, I think a week or 2 weeks ago, and they introduced this idea of digital debt. And that got me thinking, what's that? In other words, if we are successful and we bring in all these collaboration hubs, there's going to be so much information coming at our employees. They're going to be overloaded, right? You're going to be saturated. So this idea of digital debt, what can we do about that? And we should start thinking about that before it hits our employees. And this is where I'll go back to the very beginning of where you started this interview. I'll go back to my work experiences. So in my experience in aviation, 19 years in aviation in all different environments, both as an instructor, but also operationally in all kinds of different environments, is saturation or pilot overload. And when I first started flying, a lot of the instrumentation was all analog, highly dependent on the pilot, All of the navigation, everything was done on knee boards. And by the time I retired, everything had really gone glass cockpit. A lot of the functions were actually done by the aircraft, or the aircraft was connected back to home, and there were people looking and checking over the aircraft while I was flying it. So really, really quite amazing of the advancements. So I start thinking about that in terms of these hubs and where this, you know, smarter systems, whether it's generative AI or just better design software, could start taking off some of this load off of our employees and kind of create, I call it, I'm noodling this idea of a digital assistant or a digital scientist idea, where it's, you know, in this hub idea, it's thinking ahead, it's working. I can offload some routine tasks, things I just, you know, draft me my first draft of my memo report I need to generate based on all my research for the last 6 months. Give me a first draft, right? I mentioned that idea and people are like, that would be great. I'm like, I know it's very futuristic, but I just think we got to stay ahead of all this data coming at people and being able to do something about it. I mean, the aviation, you know, for fighter pilots that go, that's not me, but that go at way faster speeds than I ever did, they created this heads up display to get to just the critical information you need so you can perform the mission. I'm envisioning something like that in the future, where we'll have something like that that could help people, especially the more complicated functions, roles within a company. You know, and I think it was on one of your podcasts or maybe one of the sessions we had where you said there's a day in the library saves you a year in the lab. So this idea I'm working on is this idea of a day with a digital scientist or a digital assistant would save you 10 years in the lab, just to be aspirational, right? And there's a couple of things that keep in mind about how fast things move in that space, right? You got to be protective of your intellectual property. I think there's authorities that will only let you go so fast. But I do think there's the physical world applies, right? All of this new technology takes power to do the math, right? Because it's all math. And there's only so much power available. I know people are working on some of the new AI capabilities and they get throttled. Throttle's a new word, right? It means the service is busy. I can't do anything for you. So there's already some limits to this. But there is a point of this, too, of how we could evolve in this space is I call it my circumference of fear. This came back from my work experience when I was a flight instructor. You'd hand the controls over to a student pilot and your hands would be around the stick in a certain circumference. You would only let that student go so far before you took over control, right? So there's a view of assistive technology. You as a professional still are going to have your circumference of fear around when you still feel good about that technology. It's giving you the right results when it's not, but your ability to intercede if you need to, right? So I think that's a key principle. Still noodling on a lot of this idea, but the more I noodle on it, the more I'm like, yeah. And you may ask, why did I pick aviation? Well, I have that experience, but I tend to think aviation could be kind of a foreteller of where we could go. Aviation, highly dangerous environment. Things are primarily focused on safety first, and then the mission. Why safety? Well, it's real simple. Aircraft fall out of the sky and people die. So you get a lot of these advancements in technology and stuff will come in those critical industries first. Probably a good place to look and maybe where things could be if you're trying to be kind of forward thinking and where things could evolve to. So just an opinion, my opinion based on my experience. So
that's awesome. Thank you. And we probably have some Boeing folks on the call too who would agree with you. Right. So does anyone want to jump off of mute and jump in with a question or put one into the chat? Let's see. Okay, the first question, do you see a connection to new employee training, hiring procedures, and or hiring profiles in all things digital?
Yeah, absolutely. That's part of the work we're doing around our idea of a career hub, especially for onboarding of new employees. And our company has a huge focus on safety. So bringing new people into the company and making sure they're exposed and trained properly. And we do everything we can around safety up front. So absolutely. And we've experimented some already in the recruiting process. There's some technologies that are out there that we've already started exploring with and using some a digital assistant or a chatbot in that space as well. So there's been some exploration in there for certainly. Yep.
Okay. And what's been the biggest internal headwind that you've seen?
Yeah.
Like aviation reference there too.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate the headwind. Yeah, I know. Aviators don't like headwinds. It takes too long to get there. I had made a reference to change management. So I think it's, people can be wedded to the way they're doing their work now, which is fine. But the idea of a collaboration hub is still a headwind, in my view. This idea of how I work versus how we work, this need to know, want to know, just the right balance of those things, I think, are going to be still continue to be a challenge. A collaboration hub, it's almost like if you ever read Malcolm Gladwell, really good thinker, he wrote a book called Tipping Point. And it's almost, when do you hit that tipping point where all of a sudden you sit there and go, and it just takes off? And there's ideas on how to get to that tipping point. We mentioned our podcast. Malcolm Gladwell talked about mavens. Find those mavens to help change the culture. To help change just the ways people thinking about this. Because once they get inside, and once you get in, it's almost like you open the huddle and you bring somebody in, they're like, wow, this is what I was missing. I didn't know all this was here. This is freaking awesome, right? It's just trying to reach that tipping point. I read a lot too, so
Thank you, Peter. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Fantastic. I really enjoyed your talk. I'm curious what the feedback has been from your employees as you've rolled out these new digital tools in this world of, people wanting to work from home and the remote employee. Thank you.
We have a mix. So we have a mix of obviously of employees. The majority of our workforce are going to be our frontline workers or who are working in our plants. A lot of the effort that I've talked about here today are focused on our knowledge workers. But we, if you, in my aspiration I was given, it was, as I think about these hubs, this ability to be able to connect anywhere, anytime. So it has melded well with this hybrid work environment, whether you're in the office full time or you're in and out or you're on the road. One thing I would tell you is it's done for us, as you can tell on the call today, we use Teams, is, I mean, it's transformed our company in terms of communication and collaboration, regardless of where you're at. And I know some other companies have done similar things is, if you're going to have a team meeting, even if six people are together in a room and two aren't, everybody's on camera. So scopes up. And you get that same experience that we had in COVID. And you feel much more included. So inclusive is a big deal. We talk about inclusiveness, but what can you do about it? Little things like that make a big deal. These collaboration hubs where people can get insights. I want to know, and we're okay that you know, and I can get into these hubs and I can see what's going on and I can feel more included and I can see what I'm doing, then we're doing something about it and not just talking about it. So very powerful.
Yeah, from a, from my perspective, the thing that I've struggled with the most as I've, brought people back into the office. The thing that we struggled with the most were I was ideation and then mentorship were the two big ones that I struggled with. and I don't know. I view those as opportunities for future innovation, but, you know, I think there are some things that, you know, replicating the in-person experience is extremely difficult and challenging.
Like, oh, yeah, absolutely. Fully agree with that. Fully agree.
And the next question we had was, what approaches to asynchronous communication and working have you worked with this collaboration hubs concept?
Yeah, I think that's a key part of this whole collaboration hub concept is the asynchronous part of it. Remember, we had talked about time. Time could be, it could be the next day or it could be 20 years from now. We have to account for that. From the hub point of view, what we have found valuable, especially like for new onboarding, new hires, or even new members to the team, capabilities where, you know, using channels within teams where the conversations are persistent. So persistence is a big deal. And that historical reference, things that in the past, entire conversations may have been captured over email. And the only people that benefited from that were the people that were on the email, right? Those kinds of things. So trying to work with teams to think about project teams on different ways to work instead of using your primary method as your email. You know, get out and use some of these newer capabilities and newer collaboration hubs. But that's a change, right? That's a big change. People work and think about just work my mailbox, and you now given me yet another place I have to go to check, right? And so make this collaboration hub send me emails when there's something I need to go check, and then people put rules on their mailbox for those auto notifications to put them in another folder that they never look at. So you're kind of losing the whole benefit. And that starts getting me thinking about, you know, the whole idea of digital debt, right? They're dealing with the digital debt by ignoring it. Whereas in the future, it would be better to have an assistant who could look through that, a digital assistant who could look through that and tell me if it's relevant or not and escalate that for me instead of some rule I may have set up that may not be set up correctly. And I could be missing something very critical that I should know about. And then we try to make these collaboration hubs as immersive as possible too. You know, when you're in there, the whole space, you know, that's the idea of built-in AI. I'm in the R&D space. I should have a view of what's going on in that space since I'm there. And, you know, in my interactions, what do I need to do? What the key things that are coming out? That's the whole idea. Very aspirational concepts.
Yes, that's me. I am the one who is setting it to go to my email. I am the problem.
I've done the same thing.
So next question is, how have you been able to replicate the informal network building of the water cooler conversations, which are key to building relationships?
Obviously that can't. You can't really do that from as it already is said by somebody else, a physical world, you just can't do that. But what we have found, you know, I've noticed is my cell phone never rings anymore, which is nice. I get notifications and saying, hey, can you take a quick call? And guess what? The call isn't on my cell phone. The call is over Teams. And typically it's all video. In the past, prior to implementation of Teams, it would have never happened that way. It would have been a phone call. So I do see some of those, you know, pass by conversations have just started to take a little bit different format based on the different enterprise technologies that we've implemented. But I don't think we're ever going to be able to replace those as they would naturally occur.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. But I guess having all of the information in one space, then you're able to find out who's doing things a little better, right? So you can find
absolutely that. Yeah, and if absolutely you think about it that way, for sure, that's the idea of the collaboration hub. You know, I heard about something and what's going on with it. I can go in the hub and for that topic, and I can find out what's going on. As long as it's a want to know topic, I can get in and find out what's going on and get myself more educated about what the initiative may be.
Because that was something that at the beginning of the pandemic, and I'm sure some of you have heard me say this before, but somebody was lamenting the loss of the water cooler conversations. And then another person said, well, who said that those were the best way of finding out what was going on anyway? You know, I mean, it is quite random if you think about it. You know, whoever you tend to be thirsty with at the same time is not a great predictor of who you should be collaborating with. But
yeah, I've heard that, the negative side of that too, which is that was a huge time sink that I never got anything done. So some of those conversations. So I think it goes both ways on how it works out.
So. Yeah, I like the organizational thought, you know, but that's just how my brain works. I like to know who's doing what and where I can find it.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm going on, you know, camera on to camera off. I don't like people watching me eat, but the one of the things I struggle with my folks is, you know, getting them to write stuff down. So you're a content generator, if you think about it, and what you're trying to empower is everybody generating content. So have you come up with any ways to incentivize folks to generate content within your organization, and how do you manage that?
Yeah, incentivize, you mean, and if financially, no. What we're trying to work on is, I've learned about the discovery process with, you know, desirable, feasible, and viable. Really working on that desirable element, and just seeing what we could do with that capability. There's some newer technologies that are out there in terms of being able to capture, make it easy to capture that content, whether it's typewritten, it's handwritten, it comes in the form of videos or images. Just how do we get that information captured and then organized and then curated is the way I would think about it. We're specifically working on that idea right now on how to make that a more desirable process, and people can see the advantage of, wow, if I do this, it saves me so much time up front, later down the process. But nothing from a, you know, I would say a financial perspective at this point. We're just kind of going to more, as our newer generation of employees are coming, you know, they've gone through college and they've never used a composition book. I can't imagine that, right? I used a composition book. They've done everything digital on iPads or, you know, stylus pens on touchable screens and using whatever the technology was at the time, whether it's OneNote or some other application. So we're starting to see that influx coming, and they're going, why don't you have this, right? I'm used to using it. This is the preferred way. And so I think that influx,
I like a bunch helps. Of subscriptions to third party vendors, you know, flooding my inbox, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Everybody's kind of got their
everyone
favorite.
Has a different tool, but at the end of the day, if people don't add to that tool, you know, that's right. That's where I struggle.
Yeah.
Great. Yep. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, we've got just two more questions and then we'll wrap things up. So this one, how do you separate the want to know from need to know? And that, I imagine, is very tricky and political.
Well, it's driven by policy around company confidential information. We have different classifications that drive that. And then within what part of the company you're on, we just follow the rules that are given to us around our knowledge security policies. And then we adhere to that. And then we have continuous controls around that to check to make sure we're not getting out of boundaries of it. So a good knowledge security policy, it was very helpful to be able to set this capability up. And we try to make sure we're, you know, as we're bringing on a hub capability, if it's lacking in a spot, we always work with knowledge security, our IT security, intellectual property teams to make sure we got the right design in up front.
Okay. And actually, before we move to the last question, can you reiterate the six focus areas again for us?
Sure. Customers. So customer service, customers, human resources, so employees, sourcing or our suppliers, product development, so our products. I call it capital engineering. These are our people that design our plants, process line, major pieces of equipment to produce our products. And then the enterprise, so the common tool set that we all use, you know, Teams being a key one, but there's other common tool sets we use regardless of where you're at. So when we have cross team initiatives or collaboration required, we all use the same set of tools. Another big learning from my prior work experience, especially in aviation, standardization, right? If it's if it offloads you and allows you to focus on the mission, standardization is an awesome thing.
All right, last question is, how do you proactively build a network when your work statement does not provide opportunity for collaboration? We're mostly confined to our desks, especially in IT.
Proactively build a network. I'm not sure yeah, I quite understand the question, but I mean, our collaboration hubs are built around OC employees, and they're really function around the function oriented. So I'm not sure I quite understand the question.
Well, we'll go to the next one then, because we actually did have one person who raised their hand. So did you want to unmute yourself?
Yeah. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Lei from Exalta. I'm leading the R&D organization. I have a question regarding, it sounds like you are leading a very comprehensive initiatives around several areas, right? So six categories. And to me, that's a very comprehensive endeavor. And I'm just wondering, how do you really plan with all your stakeholders in terms of planning the milestones, or, you know, because it's going to take time step by step in each of these areas. How do you plan or envision those step by step milestones, and also the budgetary support from the company?
I would say it we do run it as a program, so I'm I would say the program leader. I help facilitate the program. We have strong teams under each areas, in areas where we may need to improve or add to the team, that's where I get involved. Or we're evaluating maybe a new technology or existing technology we want to invest in, I'll step in and provide my assistance. But they're really solved on the each. It may sound like it's all one cohesive thing, but it's really we're approaching this as a matrix of teams and resources. Some are well established and they already know what they're doing. We're just providing some overall guidance, coaching, and we provide an avenue for communication. From a budgeting perspective, the company has committed, you know, a focus around funding these kind of stage two opportunities. So it's very it's top down driven. And I, again, that's why I said I really focus on the stage two things. I try to stay out of the stage one items so we don't get distracted. And we're really just trying to evolve this hub idea. And these hubs could be just coming up in pieces. Don't think they're coming out as huge waves to the company, because they're not. It takes time. You have the right concept, and then how do you grow from there? You know, one of our hubs initially started with 3 users, and we're in that one, there's over 1,000 users now. So it just takes time, and you're kind of curating each one as they mature. But don't take away that I'm running some major program. I'm not. I don't view it that way. I've kind of got my 6 focus areas. I got a lot of smart people that are off and running, and then I'm just coming in and providing some guidance, some coaching, some funding at times, some communication to make sure we're making progress in those six areas of my focus right now. Good question. Thank you for asking.
All right. And we're going to go ahead and wrap it up there. So, Pete, this has been fantastic. Thank you for sharing all of that wonderful, all of those wonderful insights from your experience and also Owens Corning. We really appreciate it. And thanks to everyone who asked questions and joined us this afternoon. All right.
Thank you, Lee.
Thank you so much. And we will see all of you in July. We'll be missing June again, and we'll be talking about the legal and ethical implications of these new AI tools that we're all seeing. All right. So thanks, everyone, and have a great rest of your afternoon.
All right.